Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Wednesday, November the 14th. Beautiful day here in Texas. A little chilly. I think it's going to be in the 50s this afternoon. But as far as the sunshine and everything, just an absolutely perfect day. Quite a contrast from a couple of days ago when it was not sunny. It was actually kind of rainy and chilly. Well, today we're going to talk about the next Speaker of the House. We don't know who it'll be. And we don't know because there are differences within the Democrat Party. We're also going to talk a little bit about these recounts in Florida and Georgia. And I'm going to tell you about an article that I wrote over at the American Thinker today regarding this topic and remembering Richard Nixon back in 1960, who also faced a dilemma of potential recounts and so on. And I think it may be worthwhile for people to read how Nixon handled it, because I think in retrospect what Nixon did was correct, even though at the time there were many people who were calling for a recount. But just a couple of breaking stories here in the last few hours that I want to get to before we get to the speaker situation. I just learned early this morning that the NFL game that was supposed to be played in Mexico City on Monday has been canceled and moved to Los Angeles. That is really a huge story, and I'm sure that there must be. Look, those games are usually sold out months ahead of time. Those games in Mexico City, those NFL games are sold out many, many months before. And I understand some fans from different cities were traveling to Mexico City to watch the game as well, fans in the United States. So there's a lot of people who are very angry about this in the United States, but primarily in Mexico City, where, as I say, they invest a lot of money in these games. Now, the NFL is saying that the field is not in good condition. Look, I'm not there. I don't know. This is a soccer field. The largest stadium in Mexico City, Estadio Azteca, it's over 100,000 people who can sit in that field, in that stadium. And I remember when the Cowboys were in Mexico City back in the 90s, I think 94, the Cowboys were down there and the field was in very bad shape. And they had to put some sort of turf at the last minute, and it was simply not a good situation. I remember a lot of the regulars didn't even play because Landry was afraid, their coach Landry, was afraid that they would get hurt, and correctly so. It was an exhibition game back then. So I don't know what happened here. I'm going to have to get more details. But this is shocking, really, that a week before the game, it was a Sunday night game, I think it's Monday night, that literally less than a week, they decide to move the game. I mean, moving a game like this is no easy task. You know, now I'm assuming the players are still in the United States. They've not flown down. So that part, it's not a burden on them. They were not down there. But as far as the fans who bought tickets, it's a mess. This is a real mess for the NFL. I'll just put it that way. It is a total, complete mess for the NFL. I just don't know how in the world they waited so long. They had to know a week ago that the field was not in good shape. Now, I wonder, and it's just a guess on my part, I wonder if they had a soccer game over the weekend and that tore up the field. I'm wondering if that was the case. I don't know. Again, I don't know. I'm just speculating because they had to know for some time that there were problems on that field. Anyway, I'm sure we'll hear more about that story as time goes by. Well, let's take a look at this situation with what's happening down in Georgia and what's happening in Florida. I mentioned that I have a post over at the American Thinker today where I talk about the last time we had we've had two major presidential disputes or results disputes in recent memory. I mean, back in the 19th century, there were a couple of them, like 1876, which turned out to be a disaster. There was also one, I think, in 1828 or 1824. So we've had these before. But the last two, of course, were the two that most people remember, and that's in 1960, Kennedy and Nixon, and of course, in 2000, Bush and Gore. In the 2000 situation, you had this, you know, vote counting going on down in Florida that turned into a national disgrace, and eventually Bush won, and every recount that was done after that, including the recount that was done by those independent newspapers, Bush won. And now in South Florida, as well as Georgia, they're asking for a recount. There's a difference of 12,000 votes. I mean, that is, you're not going to make that up. In fact, interestingly enough, something like 60 of the 67 counties have already recounted, and the difference is 33 votes that went to Scott, who's leading. So that just goes to show you that these recounts generally don't change the totals in any way whatsoever. Back in 1960, there was a huge problem between Kennedy and Nixon, and many people wanted Nixon to recount. Many people wanted Nixon to call for a recount and challenge the results in Texas, in Illinois, and even in Alabama. And after hearing all the points of view, including President Eisenhower, who wanted his Vice President Nixon to call for a recount or at least challenge the results, Vice President Nixon decided, no, I'm not going to do it. Now, I'm not trying to make, I'm sure that Vice President Nixon took a look at the results and said, you know what, it may be difficult to prove all of it, and I don't want to put the country through all of this, only to find out a month later that not much changed. So he made a tactical decision that, no, he was going to accept the results, and he was not going to challenge. The net result of that decision was that the day after the election, the afternoon after the election, we had a president-elect who was able to put a government together and move on. Compare that to 2000, where we went to December 12th, a month after the election, until there was a concession. And look at the negative impact that it had on president-elect Bush, who had to rush through a cabinet. They didn't have a cabinet put together even as they took office. And it was just a divisive, poisonous thing that we saw in 2000, in contrast to 1960, when I'm sure there were many, many Republicans, believe me, all you have to do is go back to that time and read what people are saying. There were many Republicans who wanted Vice President Nixon to challenge the results. They knew they had evidence of fraud and vote mishandling and so on. But Vice President Nixon said, okay, now let's accept the results and move on. Let's not do that to the country. Now, the situation in Georgia and in Florida today is not anywhere near comparable to that. There's no evidence of fraud. The margins of victory are big, both in Georgia for the governor's race and in Florida for the governor and the U.S. senator race. So, I mean, the margins, like 12,000 for Scott, and like 36,000 for DeSantis, and in Georgia, it's pretty big too. And the fact that these are being challenged and that we have all these provisional ballots and we're finding all these ballots, I think that's horrible for the country, because the net result of all of this, I believe Nelson will be elected, DeSantis will be elected, and I think the fellow in Georgia, the Republican, will also be elected. But the net result of all of this is going to be that you're going to have, whoever wins, one half of the state is going to say he's not legitimate. And that is absolutely horrible for our democracy and our way of doing elections. So, you know, people are going to have to start thinking about the country more than just about themselves or their party. That's just my advice to the Democrats. We're going to take a little break. I want you to hear from my friend Carlos, and we'll be right back.
This is Carlos Guerrero Harpiz. I would like to see you guys this Saturday night at Tzatziki's at the Star, located at 6765 Winning Drive in Frisco. I'll be performing instrumental high-energy music at 6:30 until 9:30 p.m. Make your reservation today at 972-377-2276. Remember, Tzatziki's at the Star is the place to hang out on Saturday night. For upcoming dates, look for me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
And we have a link to Carlos on the show information. Just click on that. It'll take you to where he's playing around town. He's playing in different places. We also have a link for my friend Duke Machado, who's a car dealer, a car salesman. here in the area. So click on that if you're looking for an automobile. Just a couple of On This Day in History notes. Aaron Copland, the great American composer, born in Brooklyn on this day in 1900. He died in 1990. And we just learned about 10 or 15 minutes before the show started that Catherine McGregor died at age 93. For those of you who remember that show, Little House on the Prairie, well, Catherine McGregor was the famous, the super famous, and sometimes controversial, Mrs. Olsen. Remember Mrs. Olsen and her daughter Nellie Olsen? Yes, if you watched Little House like I did, you remember Mrs. Olsen. She was one of the coolest characters on the show, although a lot of people didn't like her, but she was a really cool character on that show. Well, what's going on with the Democrats? They are supposed to be electing a speaker soon. They will be doing their campaigning, and the obvious choice is Nancy Pelosi, but there's a lot of opposition growing within the Democrat Party for Nancy Pelosi. I think a lot of it is generational, frankly. You now have a new people coming into the House. These Democrats come from suburbs. They come from parts of the country that are more conservative and so on. Many of them ran on the basis that they wouldn't vote for Nancy Pelosi. So I think there's a generational fight. There is a regional fight. And I just think that this is going to put a lot of pressure probably on Nancy Pelosi. I still think she's going to get it somehow. I think the dinosaurs of the Democrat Party will come together and probably get 218 votes and get her in. But I think it's going to be very controversial. I also think the Democrats are already starting to see a little bit of this with this situation up in New York and, you know, the deal that was made with Amazon. Already a lot of Democrats are already talking about crony capitalism, and they're talking about their own, which is the mayor of New York City, Democrat, and the governor of New York, also a Democrat. They're already talking about crony capitalism and how much was given away in tax breaks, I guess, to get Amazon. By the way, Dallas was one of the cities that Amazon was looking at, and they went to New York. I think they just made them an unbelievable deal. That's as much as I can say. But when these Democrats come together, whoever their speaker is, when they come together next year, first of all, they're going to have to figure out what they're going to do about health care. They all ran on health care, but they don't really have a solution for health care. What they have is a speech that they gave at the campaign rally or at the debate that they had, but they don't really have a speech. They don't really have a solution. And I think that also with the Second Amendment, I think you're going to be some huge conflicts within the party for the Second Amendment, because I think a lot of the liberals want to go after gun control, and they're going to run into a lot of Democrats from, you know, those parts of the country where gun control is not an issue. And then, of course, you have the question of immigration and DACA. What are they going to do about that? They're under a lot of pressure from some of the immigrant groups and some of the DACA groups and all of that to do something about DACA and immigration. The bottom line, I don't think they're going to come together on anything. In fact, what I believe is going to happen is that there's going to be a lot of dissatisfaction among the Democrats, because a lot of these Democrats were elected with 1 to 2 percentage points in their districts. If you look at a lot of those elections, most of them were pretty close. And a close election in 2018 translates into a very close re-election, or certainly a challenge in 2020. And a lot of these Democrats in 2020 are going to be challenged again, I believe, in their districts. And they're going to be running in a year that President Trump is running, which means the Republican turnout will be bigger. And they're also going to have to be running on their record. And I honestly don't think they're going to do anything. I think these people are going to have fist fights and cat fights like we have not seen in quite some time. And eventually, they're not going to look very good. They're not going to look very good. And I believe that President Trump will exploit that in negotiating with the House Democrats, even shutting down the government and so on, negotiating with them. And I think at the end of the day, the House Democrats are the ones, in my opinion, who are going to be facing some very difficult problems coming together and getting anything done. And that's not going to make it easy for them to win re-election, many of them, I should say, in 2020. Well, thank you for listening. Have an absolutely wonderful day. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, and we will talk to you later.